As I throw my coat on the chair, I see Alexander Gardner's 1865 portrait of Abraham Lincoln hanging on my living room wall. My first impression of President Lincoln came from a book I checked out of the Bushnell Way Elementary School Library, Abe Lincoln, Log Cabin to White House, by Sterling North. In it, President Lincoln fought to free the slaves. He was a great man who paid the ultimate price. Mr. North described President Lincoln as unsightly, even homely. To a 10-year-old girl, that meant that President Lincoln was ugly. I didn't understand how an ugly man could become the President of the United States. Gardner's photograph, taken just days before Lincoln was shot in Ford's Theater, contradicts North's description of a man who got shortchanged in the looks department. Dominated by a pair of eyes set in darkness, Lincoln's face is magnificent. His left eye, engaged by what it sees, looks out with endless empathy, while his right eye tells a story that is harder to comprehend. The bottom half of his face, framed by two deep lines, singles out his prominent nose. But it's those eyes, particularly the left eye, the caring eye, the engaged eye, that is so compelling. Or is it? As my own eye drifts across Lincoln's wide forehead, I look back into the right eye, the one drawn toward reflection, and you know what I see? I see the darkness of a great calling. Did President Lincoln's face become magnificent because he accepted a grave responsibility that would lead to a tragic end? Or was it the angle of Mr. Gardner's pose, the light, the patina? Was it good luck or a fortunate mistake? After living with Mr. Lincoln's portrait for several years, I've come to this conclusion. His beauty, like the hidden cast of his right eye, became identifiable only after I included unsightly as a possible way of describing a beautiful face. Sharing wall space with Abraham Lincoln are 47 other portraits of men I've collected over 25 years. I call them my prisoners. There's Robert Mapplethorpe's portrait of the artist Francesco Clementi, who presents his hands from under a black coat. There's Marion Robert Morrison's face before he became John Wayne. On the bottom left, Tony Ward is painted with mud. His hands frame his eyes. Maybe he's sick of looking out from under the dirt. Maybe he doesn't want to be painted into a shadow. Maybe he's tired of being Herb Ritt's favorite model. The face of the Russian revolutionary and poet Vladimir Mayakovsky stares out in shaved head resistance. He brings up longings. I'd carry his coattails. Oh, I'd be his lackey. Next to the kitchen door, Elvis Presley is sticking his tongue into a young woman's mouth. I never understood why he made millions of girls cry until I saw Albert Wertheimer's kiss in an ad for Sam Shepard's play, Fool for Love. Which brings up Sam Shepard, who is framed dead center among the other prisoners on my wall. I was 31 when I went to a matinee of Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven at Cinema One on 3rd Avenue between 59th and 60th Streets in Manhattan. The movie seemed to glide through a brilliantly lit travelogue until Sam Shepard walked onto the screen and took my breath away. His face bore the imprint of the West in all its barren splendor. For years, I followed Sam's life from the safety of distance, a fan's distance. He was the playwright of Barry Child and True West. He worked with Bob Dylan. He was married. He fell out of marriage and into love with Jessica Lange. He wrote, quote, "When you're looking for someone, you're looking for some aspect of yourself, even if you don't know it. What we're searching for is what we lack." And that's the way it was. Some aspect of him was an aspect in me that I hadn't developed. Was something I lacked, or so I thought. As life would have it, Sam slipped into the background until 10 years later, when I inadvertently came across his face on a 50-cent 8x10 glossy I bought at the Rose Bowl swap meet. The photograph was not exceptional except for one thing. Sam's face. Oh, that damn face. And you know what? A day doesn't go by without a glance his way. Gary Cooper also came to me in motion, but he wasn't beautiful. What he was old. I saw him walking a dusty town's deserted street toward four killers in Fred Zinnemann's 1952 motion picture High Noon. The movie was told in real time, a time where events happened at the same rate that my 10-year-old eyes experienced them. Everything about the movie seemed super real. On Gary Cooper's wedding day to Grace Kelly, he had a choice. He could either ride into the horizon with his pretty new bride or stay and face the killers. As a girl, I didn't think about Gary Cooper's looks or the difference between Grace Kelly's age and his. I didn't care. Would he ever see her again? Would he die? Did he have to be so brave? I remember their goodbye. I remember Tex Ritter singing, "Do not forsake me, oh my darling." I remember crying. Looks weren't the issue. Courage was. I didn't know that courage was a form of beauty, but I must have felt it.